June 27th, 2008, it's the Lullabot Podcast. Lullabot Podcast. It's Lullabot Podcast number 60. Woo!
Yeehaw.
What's that? Double,
it's time to retire.
Double silver? Or bronze? Is that the bronze anniversary? I don't know. I'm making it up.
Huh. I think it's... No, bronze is earlier than that.
I don't know. 60. We have to get up to, like, beyond where people think of anniversaries. You know, if you go, like, 150th, people aren't going, like, what is that? Diamonds? I don't know. So, yeah, it's the Lullabot Podcast. We've now done 60 podcasts about Drupal. I know you didn't think that someone could talk about a web content management system that much, but, we've managed to do it. We're not proud. We're not even very happy, but we're here and it's number 60 and we've got cake and champagne and, ginger ale for the kids. So there you go. I'm Jeff Robbins, and I'm here with
Angie Byron
and
Nate Haug,
and also
Addy Berry,
as well as
Kent Bye.
And it's a little Lullabot team. We get together almost every other week ish, and talk about what's going on with Drupal content management system, and what's happening, tips and tricks, and news, and I don't know, what did we talk about? All that stuff. Yeah. And, this podcast, is the 60th podcast. So we decided to do sort of a 60 theme kind of, so it's 0 to 60 in 60 minutes. A Drupal 60 Drupal frequently asked question starter things in 60 minutes.
Best effort.
We're going to do our best. Yeah. But first, Lullabot Workshop's coming up in Providence, Rhode Island. It's already selling out. We've sold out the first half of the week is the Drupal Intensive, but we still have spots for the theming in jQuery and a few spots if you want to come to the entire week. So Drupal Intensive and theming in jQuery in Providence, Rhode Island. If you go to lullabot.com/training, you can find out about the workshops there, and we'll let you know when. It says on the page for Drupal Intensive that it's sold out, but if the other one sells out, it'll say there. So if it doesn't say sold out, sign up quick. Get in while you can. Very popular. Very fun. We have a lot of fun doing those workshops, and hope to see you there. What other announcements do we have? Oh, DVDs. Kent, you're here.
Yes. The DVDs are out the door. They're getting pressed right now. So you can go to lullabot.com for some more information on setting out a pre-ordering for that. But yeah, really excited. They're looking really great. And yeah, it's sort of a sit down and get a brain dump of a lot of sort of introductory stuff about Drupal. So yeah.
It's Understanding Drupal is the first DVD. We're going to do a whole series of DVDs, but our first one is called Understanding Drupal, and it's an intro to Drupal concepts and the sort of kind of getting entrenched in Drupal a little bit, like this podcast, but a lot more in depth and on video. So it's more of a sit down experience. We're going to try and just sort of whip through these questions today, giving them 60 questions in 60 minutes will be, you know, an average of less than a minute a question. And, but the DVD gets a lot more, in depth, with some of these things that we're talking about. So check it out, lullabot.com. You can find out more information about the DVD and, you can pre-order. And, if you didn't get around to listening to this podcast right when it came out, you might be able to order outright. So, go and check it out. Yeah, we're really excited about the DVD. So, other news.
Seged.
Yeah.
DrupalCon Seged has early bird pricing that ends June 30th. So if you're planning to come to Hungary, and you totally should, you need to sign up before then. You can sign up after that, of course, but it goes up 40 euros each, basically every couple weeks until the end. So if you're a Drupal community and you want to speak at DrupalCon, again, you totally should. They're accepting session proposals, so go ahead and propose some cool sessions that you'd like to give at DrupalCon.
DrupalCon Seged, easy for me to say. We'll talk about what DrupalCon is later in the podcast. We also wanted to mention, I think the next podcast we're going to do, so podcast 61, will be a listener questions podcast. So if you have questions for the podcast, please call 877-LULABOT. That's +1-877-585-5226. You can call that toll free anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. And if you're outside of that area, you can also call through Skype or Gizmo or any of those VoIP services. And it's cheap, if not free. Yeah. Oh, we also wanted to say, this is self-serving, but we wanted to say, we also have a Twitter account for Lullabot, and you can follow Lullabot on Twitter. If you just username Lullabot on Twitter, you can also follow me. I have a Twitter account. It's J Jeff. I pronounce it Jeff or double J E double F. And you can
still
follow.
Trying to get your numbers higher than certain other people.
I'm trying to get higher than James. Yes. I'm trying to get more people than James. So we won't mention what James's Twitter account is because he's not on this podcast.
And his username is not, ubiquitous or the same throughout the web. So,
well, no,
people wouldn't be able to guess it.
No, people would definitely, if they're familiar with James, I don't know if they would be able to guess, but mine is J Jeff and follow me on Twitter. All right, let's start. Let's do this. 60 Drupal beginner questions in 60 minutes. Here we go. Everybody start your clocks. Start your timers and go. So the first question is really basic. These are basic questions. What is Drupal? I'll start. I can start answering, I guess, too, right? Sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Drupal is often referred to as a content management system. I usually tell people, a lot of people are familiar with blogs, blogging software. A blog is a content management system for managing a very specific type of content, which is a text-oriented blog entry. Drupal is a much more abstracted system for managing any type of content. So you could build a video management sort of YouTube kind of thing with it, or photos, or any different kind of thing. But it's also an underlying PHP-based web application framework that this content management system is built on. So you can actually build other types of things with Drupal. You could conceivably build like a search engine with Drupal, or e-commerce platform, that kind of thing. That's not so conventionally content management system kind of thing. So that's what we talk about when we talk about Drupal.
I'd say the other thing that Drupal is a community. It's the community of contributors and, you know, everybody who uses it that sort of works together to make it better as well.
Yep. All right. How do you pronounce Drupal? I guess on an audio podcast, we've kind of given it away.
It's Drupal. It's not Drupal. Remember, it's a CMS. It's not a drag queen.
Like okay. RuPaul. Drupal.
What does Drupal mean?
Oh, that one's me. I'll take a stab at this. So Drupal, let's start backwards with the history and where it actually began, which was drop.org, which that was the original website before Drupal.org, and it came about to be because Dries was registering or attempting to register the domain dorp.org, which is village in Dutch. So you can see the community aspect went back a long time in history. But when he was registering DORP, he typed in drop accidentally, and he saw drop.org was available. He was like, oh, wow, drop, that's a lot better than DORP. And so he just bought drop.org instead. And then after a few years on drop.org, the software that was developed on Drop.org, Dries decided to name Drupal, which is drop in Dutch. But it wasn't spelled Drupal as it is today. It was spelled D-R-U-P-P-E-L-L, which is how you spell Drupal in Dutch. So he anglicized it, if you will, and spelled it Drupal the way we have it today.
In a way that continued to confuse it. People still pronounce it correct. But, yeah.
It didn't really make it any easier to pronounce.
Bonus tip for the newbies, Dries Buitart is the founder of the Drupal project and is the person where we talk about Dries in the podcast. It's him. He's the guy. He's the guy that started the whole thing. So every so often we have him on the podcast. Just, you know, keep things interesting. So next question.
Oh, what's with the scary alien executioner head?
I love that.
That's our logo, by the way.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, when you install your Drupal site and you, the default logo, it's sitting up on the corner is this weird little alien thing that's looking at you with a grin. Some people call it a smile, but that it's called DrupalCon. It's our mascot, as it were, and it really is just a water drop. You know, drop, Drupal, get it, with the little weird mask. Some people think it looks like an alien. Some people think it looks like an executioner and have not so good reactions to it. But really, it's just a friendly water drop.
Just a friendly water drop. And it's got an infinity sign for the eyes.
Ooh.
Ooh. That's deep, baby.
Yeah. Blowing my mind.
Next question. So what can you build with Drupal?
Well, with Drupal, you can build anything from a brochure website that just has basic pages. But really, the big strength of Drupal is that it's a dynamic content management system, which means that you have users logging in to your website, and then as they're going to a specific page, there's information that's very specific to them coming up on different parts of the page. So it's really sort of a platform to run communities on, and you can have different roles and permissions to the different users to be able to have them do different levels of access and on your site. So it's that, and it's also a platform to build applications on top of. So you can sort of take the root Drupal install, the core install, and build on top of that any sort of functionality that you want. So you can do social networking or, you know, all different types of things. So, and the Lulbots have actually been writing a book about all the specific recipes and different types of stuff that you can do with Drupal. So that should be coming out soon.
On O'Reilly?
O'Reilly Jumpstart.
Book. O'Reilly book. What's it called? Drupal Jumpstart, of course. Yes, I should know. Yes. And so, it'll be out in the fall. But, okay. End ad. Next question, number 6.
What are Drupal's limitations?
Oh, me. Huh? Well, I would say, I mean, it's open source software, and so the incentives that commercial software often has for making things easy to use and very clear, and making, you know, putting ads together and marketing, all that kind of stuff doesn't really hold for free software in the same way. I mean, it's mostly people donating their time and their energy and stuff like that. And so some of the things, like, you know, it works really well, but sometimes it can have a really, like, confusing user interface. Actually, it's sort of notorious for having confusing user interface. Documentation is not always quite up to snuff. I mean, it's developers. The thing they say about open source software a lot is it's developers making software for developers, by developers for developers. And that's starting to change, I think, with projects like Firefox and stuff. And I think hopefully Drupal will get there eventually. But there still tends to be this sort of feeling sometimes. It's like, well, why document it? I mean, just go in and read the code. It's very clear how it works. Just read the code. And also to some extent, there's this sort of, kind of cacophony that comes around such a large community as Drupal that's also so kind of democratic, you know, that it's, there's not we'll get into this a little bit later, but there's not like a central, company or something. So kind of everyone has an equal voice, but sometimes it's sort of hard to decipher who you should pay attention to, in such a community. So, yep. Question 7 is, why is Drupal better than blogging software? There's a subjective question.
Because it's awesome, that's why. So basically, the two things that really, I mean, it has a bunch of add-on modules, so you can make it do almost anything that you want. Like, you can pop in an event calendar, and you can pop in an image gallery or whatever, and that sort of stuff. But the two things I think that give it strength over most of the other systems I've seen are two particular modules called CCK, which lets you add custom content types. You can add, like, basically make a form with whatever, like a couple text fields and some radio buttons and an image field selector. And then a module called Views, which lets you display your lists of content and other things on your site in whatever way that you really want. And by mixing and matching those two things together, Drupal's sort of built on this concept of Lego blocks, where you kind of piece things together and, together build, a castle or a boat or a fire-breathing dragon or something like that. It's really broken down into small pieces so that it can be easily pieced together and kind of flexible to make it into to mold it to your very desire. I would say that's what makes it better than blogging software. Of course, it runs into the limitations that Jeff was talking about, where because it's such a generalized framework intended to basically do anything you can throw at it, a lot of times it's hard to get that nice streamlined user process or user interface and workflow and stuff that you find in a specialized tool. Number 8, who uses Drupal?
Uh-oh.
Do we leave?
Yes. Yes. All kinds of people use Drupal.
Hey, we're running out of time. We only have 60 minutes.
Go.
All right. So in the who uses Drupal domain, I mean, there's a huge spread. I'd say there's a couple really strong areas in Drupal land. I would say the music industry, very strong following. Universal, RCA, Sony BMG, three of the big five all use Drupal for powering a lot of their large websites. I would also say open source software tends to use it a lot. OpenOffice and Ubuntu are both running on Drupal, as well as a lot of other software development sites are using Drupal for their developer communities. Nonprofits, Amnesty International, Greenpeace, and political domains. Hillary Clinton ran her campaign website this year on it, and Drupal got one of its biggest starts in the Dean Space campaign that sort of launched Drupal into the political arena. But so that shows a whole variety of different people that use Drupal, but really it can be used for anything. Those are just heavy use areas of Drupal. So, yes, everyone and anyone can use Drupal.
And Dries keeps a list, at least of blog posts that he's written about various sites that are using it at buytart.net, buytart.net/tag/Drupal-sites. And there's also a website called DrupalSites.net that also has a listing of a lot of different sites. I think that people can go after they've created their own Drupal sites and put them up there so people can see sort of an index of different Drupal sites.
All right. So next question. How secure is Drupal?
Drupal's really secure. Well, there's sort of two things. I mean, there's in terms of, the underlying framework gives developers a lot of tools to do a lot of things like checking for common ways that people would leverage things. But in terms of even just general for end users, there's a module in 5 called Update Status, and it's part of Core in 6 that lets you know when the modules and Drupal Core running on your site are out of date, and will particularly flag security updates so that you know when you need to do an upgrade and make sure that your site stays secure. So I don't know if anybody wants to add additional security information without getting too deep.
Well, I would just say just generally, like, yes, it's very secure. part of being open source is that a lot of people use it, a lot of people look at it, a lot of people test it, and it's very secure. It's had a very, very good security record.
And we have a security team that does review code regularly.
And not only just for Drupal core, but any of the add-on modules that you add to it as well, which is something that most projects out there don't offer. The core software is supported in terms of security releases, but if you download something off some guy's site, you're on your own.
Cool. Next question.
Does Drupal scale?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that looking at those various websites that we've talked about, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that it scales. We didn't mention Lifetime Television and Fast Company and MTV UK, Popular Science. I mean, all of these companies are running Drupal. I mean, you know, when you're running a website of that scale and that magnitude, I think that there's always scaling problems of one sort or another. But I think Drupal's has proved itself in various ways with those sites, certainly. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's certain things built into Drupal like caching, and but there's also a lot of the LAMP stack of Linux, Apache, MySQL that you sort of have different aspects of scaling that you can do, from Memcache to all sorts of other things that you can look at the other layers that you can make sure that it's scaling. So yeah, certainly you can handle very high loads. So the next question is Drupal available in other languages?
Yes, it is. You can, the Drupal itself, the interface is totally internationalized, and it uses UTF-8 character set, so you can get websites in non-ASCII, even right-to-left languages like Arabic and Hebrew. You can build websites with Drupal using that, and there's... If you go to drupal.org/project/translations with a capital T, you can find all the list of translations that are out there. And so the next question, that sort of leads right into the next question. So you can build Drupal with single language sites, but can you also build multilingual sites with Drupal? So if you live in a country or need to build a website that is in different languages, how does that work?
Yep, you can. Drupal 6 comes with two modules, or the content translation module, which will let you translate user-generated content, and the locale module, which will generate stuff in the interface. And then there are also contributed modules such as internationalization that'll take it even further. Number 13, how often do new releases of Drupal come out?
Let's see. About once a year. That's sort of the intended schedule, but I think more typically they tend to come out, I'd say, once every 16 months or so. So about a year and a half. The development schedule is such that it's intended to be a year, but with code freeze and depending on the number of features that get in, that can be extended basically until the software is ready to be released. The way that we work the release process is when betas come out, that means that, well, by the time betas come out, all the features have been totally set in stone and there's no more string changes, so that the translators can come in and translate the interface. And then when we reduce all the critical bugs down to zero, then a release candidate comes out. And if we can go 2 weeks without any more bugs being found, then the final version is released. But if bugs are found, then we make another release candidate, wait another 2 weeks, and just keep repeating that process until the software is ready finally to be released. But there is no hard set fast schedule anywhere. It's a schedule of when the software is ready, it'll be released. All right. Anything else anybody wants to add to that?
You rocked it, Nate.
All right. Well, let's go on to the next one then. Where is the roadmap of new features for the next version of Drupal?
There is no roadmap of features. Pretty much it is open source, and so it's a scratch-your-own-itch. There is sort of general discussion, Dries and his at the DrupalCons, gives his sort of state of Drupal, and he sort of talks about ideas for things, directions that he thinks are, you know, the community should look at, kind of a thing. But the bottom line is that the features to get in are the ones that people work on. So if someone steps up and gets the work done, then the feature goes in, and if no one does, then the feature doesn't. And it's that pretty straightforward. Anybody else have anything to add on to that? Or
you rocked it. Rocked it, Addy.
Right. Question 15 is, who writes the Drupal software?
Well, the Drupal community writes the Drupal software, and what that means is basically anyone on Drupal.org that's signed up for user accounts at a minimum. But then the next sort of step is getting CVS commit access, and then once you have that, then you can sort of maintain your own module or... also, you don't even need that. Also, you can just submit patches to anything you want to change to the Drupal core. You can just, once you're a user, just submit the patch. And then if it's good enough, then it'll sort of get in to the main project. So that sort of leads into the next question, which is, what is the difference between core and contrib?
Yeah, great question. Well, we actually get pretty in depth with this on the DVD. But the short version is, and I'll keep it short because we're falling a little bit behind in our timeline here. Core is what you get when you download Drupal from Drupal.org. You go to Drupal.org and it says download Drupal, and you click on that and you download it. You get Drupal, the core files, the, you know, bootstrap stuff, and a bunch of modules. That everything there is referred to as core, and the modules you get are referred to as core modules. Basically, everything else that you can download from Drupal.org, themes, translations, and any of the 3,000 modules, give or take, that are out there, are what's referred to as contrib, short for contribution repository. So there you go. The next question is there a company that develops Drupal core?
Well, in a way, yes, there are tons of companies, but everybody who works for a Drupal shop and finds a bug in core usually submits a patch in order to fix it, or if their client needs a feature done, they'll submit a patch to core to add that feature in. But no, there's not one single company that pretty much, you know, governs the whole thing. Just everybody, companies and individuals, everybody works together to make everything better. Number 18 is, who writes the contrib modules?
So contrib modules, in core, there's sort of a gateway that you need to get through. A few core committers, two or three people that can actually put stuff into it. Contrib is a little more Wild West, where people come in and they all write their own code, and they're the ones pretty much in charge of it. And who can actually write that? Well, anybody that has a CVS application that's been accepted can write any number of modules for the Drupal contributed repository. There is a process for getting a CVS account, and it's become a little bit more stringent because of the wild growth of modules. They encourage people to work on existing modules rather than creating multiple duplicate modules that all do the same thing. So, short answer, anybody can work on Drupal contrib. Next question, can modules be written for one version of Drupal work in a different version of Drupal?
Chances are no, because the Drupal.org, Drupal's APIs change with every major version of Drupal. We're always moving forward with our code to make the leanest, meanest, best code, and so that means the APIs will change. The data will always be retained, but the way that the code's written is going to change. So almost every module will need to actually have the code changed in order to work in a new version. So... next question is question number 20. How does community development work?
A lot of on Drupal.org, there's these issue queues, and a lot of the sort of submitting for feature requests or bug fixes or tasks is sort of documented there, and then people are then submitting patches according to the sort of main projects, and then those patches get applied. So people can then review and sort of test those changes as they're going along. And Dries is sort of in charge of committing the final changes the core, and also sometimes he appoints either one or two other people to help sort of maintain a certain branch. And as was touched on earlier, with contributed modules, each sort of maintainer can either use that system publicly or sort of change it in the background. So that's how the community development works. So the next question is, where do I complain about the problems I'm having with Drupal?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a thing I think that a lot of newbies have is, you know, people who are new to Drupal come in and they're having problems and it's frustrating and it's unclear, like, who's in charge of this thing? Who can I complain to? You know, where do I go to kind of get help and figure out if this thing is just like broken or if I'm using it incorrectly or whatever. I mean, so each project on Drupal.org, each module, each theme, you know, chances are initially, you know, you're installing some contrib modules and you want to figure out what's going on there. The first place to start is the issue queue for that module. And so if you go to the project page for that down the bottom, you can, there are a couple different ways you can look, and get to the issue queue, and see all the issues that are currently open for that module. And you can see, you know, what other people are having problems with, and, you could submit a bug yourself or a support request, there. A lot of times it's, you know, it's sort of a non-commercial thing. So you get, you know, someone who's written the module, maybe for a client that they had a paid project and now, you know, they contributed it back to Drupal.org so other people could use it. But there's not a commercial, model for them. There's, you know, they're not getting paid to support, the module. And so, you know, it sort of varies, the amount that any module, contributor, maintainer will sort of support their module. But that's a good place to start. There's also, several other places, there's the Drupal forums and, IRC and stuff like that. We'll talk a little bit. Actually, that kind of leads right into the next question. Question number 22, where is the best place for me to find help and guidance with the Drupal?
Right. So Drupal offers a bunch of different avenues for that. On the Drupal.org website, there's forums, there's IRC, there's mailing lists, and then external to that, there are also books, DVDs, such as the Lullabot DVD. Okay, anyway. You can pay somebody for help. You can go to something like some training, like a Lullabot workshop, and all this kind of stuff. In general, the way that I generally draw the line is if you want support from other users on how you would best achieve something or something like that. Generally, either the forums or the /Drupal-support IRC channel is the best place to go. If you want help with code-related things, I would stick to either the development mailing list or /Drupal and IRC. The reason is because the coders tend to spend most of their time in the code and not so much time building out Drupal sites. So you actually usually get better support on, like, you know, where's the option in TinyMCE to do such and such a thing, if you're asking other users who are building sites rather than the developers who are writing code so that they can get around using TinyMCE and that kind of stuff. Number 23 is, why are the people in Drupal so mean?
Well, I wouldn't say that they're actually mean, being that I hang out in there all the time, as do a lot of other of us bots. But they're not mean. It's just that Drupal.org currently has a user base of around 300,000 users. And if you think about that and then think about the number of community contributors in Drupal, there's generally between 2 and 350 people in the Drupal room. And those are people that are generally coders, people that are writing and contributing stuff to Drupal.
This is the Drupal IRC chat room on the Freenode network. You can find out more about that on Drupal.org, look for IRC. So, sorry, just wanted to inject that.
Thanks. Yeah, totally. So the thing is that there's this massive user base and not so massive contributor base. It's still huge, but it's a small percentage of the people that are actually consumers of the product. And so coming into Pound Drupal, that's sort of where contributors are working with each other. And so people coming in and asking support questions all the time just drive them bonkers. And that's why there's the Drupal support channel where people that are specifically looking for help can find help. And the people in the Pound Drupal room can just work together to make software better for you.
And that you can find that room at pounddrupal-support.
All right. So the next question, probably the reason a lot of people are in Pound Drupal asking for help, is why does the documentation suck?
All right. So documentation doesn't suck per se. It's community contributed documentation. So it's what gets written is whoever writes up the documentation, that's what you have, kind of a thing. I think the biggest issue that people really have, there's a lot of great documentation on Drupal.org. The problem is finding it. A lot of people have problems with the sort of how it's organized and they just can't seem to find what they need. Or sometimes they find what they need and it's outdated because it was written for a previous version of Drupal, say, or something like that, and no one's gotten the time to actually update that. So it doesn't actually suck per se. It's just that it needs a lot of trimming and help and maintenance.
And Drupal moves so fast that it's just really hard to keep current documentation.
Part of it is versioning documentation. Sometimes someone writes documentation on the part they know, but they might not know all of the parts.
Oh, they're still learning.
So I would say it doesn't suck. It's just sometimes hard to navigate and get exactly what you need. So that brings us sort of the next question. Well, so how can you help fix the Drupal.org documentation?
Well, a lot of the handbook pages that are on Drupal, if you have sort of a correction, you can leave it as a comment, and sometimes the comments will then be integrated into the main sort of documentation page, or you can also sort of submit an issue to correct things that are wrong. But also, if you want to be on the documentation team, you just submit an issue to the documentation list, and then you can become a member and actually edit and create new documentation pages.
We have a podcast about that.
Yeah. And the next question is, does anyone have anything else to add on that? No? Okay. So how do you find a local user group?
Yeah, local user groups are really great for finding other people in your area to ask questions about, to talk to. Just like, there's a lot of really good stuff you can get through word of mouth in the Drupal community. I mean, just who's doing what, who's using what modules, who's had success with what kind of things. Groups.drupal.org is where the local user groups, actually all different kinds of special interest groups, but the geographically located user groups are located there as well. A good trick with that is to go search that site with Google. In Google, you can type site:groups.drupal.org and then a space and then your city or state or whatever, and it'll search groups.drupal.org for your thing. You could also try searching on groups.drupal.org for the city and see if it comes up. but Google's always a very reliable search engine. That's where you can find your local user group. If there is one, if there isn't one, start one on there and get other people to sign up. Question number 27, how do I find a list of Drupal-related events going on?
Why, great question. And in fact, you go to the same place as you go for the local user groups, which is groups.drupal.org, but this time it's /event. And there's a big ugly calendar there, but there's also a nice iCal feed that you can import into the calendar application of your choice. Question number 28 is, I love Drupal. Can I send money somewhere?
You can. And this is something that has only been a recent thing that you can actually change, that you can actually donate money basically as directly to Drupal as you can. You can go to drupal.org/donate, and that will link to a form that lets you donate money that will improve the infrastructure of Drupal.org and generally fund things like conferences like DrupalCon and general community needs. However, that page, Drupal.org/donate, is actually just a page that links to another one, which actually is where you can actually donate at association.drupal.org/donate, which leads right into the next question. What is the Drupal Association?
Well, basically, it's a group that was formed, I guess, a little over 2 years ago now, or about 2 years ago. Basically, we decided that we needed sort of a centralized entity to do things like accept money, assist with basic infrastructure for the community. They're not responsible for the code of Drupal, but basically for helping the community. And so events like DrupalCon, and the infrastructure that we need for actually running the Drupal.org website and stuff are handled by them. You can get a lot more information by going to association.drupal.org, and specifically, if you go to association.drupal.org/about/FAQ, there's a whole list of commonly asked questions to give you answers. So the next question, and this sort of came up at the beginning of our podcast in the intro news, is so exactly what is DrupalCon?
Well, DrupalCon is basically a conference for Drupal, and it happens pretty much twice a year now, and there's one in North America and one in Europe somewhere, and this past year it was in Boston, and the upcoming DrupalCon is going to be in Szeged, Hungary. And if you want to know wherever the next sort of DrupalCon is happening, you can just go to drupalcon.org, and that'll give you more information. So the next question is, what is a node?
How did I get this question? Well, again, we covered this very extensively in the DVD, but we'll just suffice to say, a node is the basic building block in Drupal. It's a piece of content. If you're building a blog site, a blog entry is a node, and basically, it's what Drupal uses. Sort of the, like I said, the basic building block of most things in Drupal. Question number 32 is, what's the difference between nodes and comments?
Right, so usually the node is the primary piece of content, such as an article or a poll or something like that. And a comment is just like a secondary piece of content, like a reply. Just say, like, good job on the article or something like that. And comments you can, you know, reply to, and they appear in a big list. And nodes are generally, they get a URL on a page of their own right. Number 33 is, how do I add or edit content in the sidebars of my site?
Right. Well, as Angie said in the previous question, the node is sort of the main piece of content. It's what gets the URL, and it's what actually people go to the page to actually look at, whether it's a blog post, an image, a video, whatever. That's the content and the node. But then things that you put in the sidebar generally... things that are additional, things that like related content or most popular content, those sort of things that add on to the main content of the page, they're all made up of blocks. And so you can go to the admin building or site building blocks page, and there you can configure what additional sidebar content there is, what blocks you want to have show up in either the sidebars, the footer, and the header. That's all in the Drupal concept of blocks, as opposed to, say, nodes or comments, which are generally in the main content area of the page. So the next one, sort of also dealing with sidebars and the general structure of your site, what is a theme?
Really, sort of as basic, the simple explanation is that a theme is a way that you can change how your site, the look of your site, make it pretty, change the colors. You can even, you know, change what kind of sidebars you have available even. And basically, this is just like modules, you can download themes from Drupal.org, contributed ones, and you just put them into your directory structure, and then you just enable the theme, and then It changes the look and it's the HTML and CSS of your site. So, and a question that often comes up about themes is, why do the contrib themes on Drupal.org suck so bad?
Well,
I didn't write that one.
I wrote that one.
There, I think there's a number of reasons why. One is typically the themers that are making sites look pretty. You have to, as it is now, you have to sort of commit the themes with CVS, so it's harder for people to deal with the different sort of CVS aspects of technologically. But there's also just the other part of just people want their websites to look original. And if they spend a lot of time and money in developing the branding for their site, then they are less likely to sort of give all that theming and design work away for free. That's sort of the basic reasons. Although there are some more options out there that we'll get to in the next couple of questions. So the next question is, where can you go to look at themes before you download them?
Yeah, well, I guess in the past, I don't know, 6 months, 8 months or something like that, there were thumbnails and preview images that were added to the themes on Drupal.org. So you can usually see some sort of a thumbnail, kind of an image of what you're going to get from the theme. And we used to have the Drupal theme garden as part of the Drupal.org infrastructure, but I think that was a lot of trouble to keep up. But it looks like someone has started their own theme garden site at themegarden.org, and you can go and see a lot of the Drupal themes there. I haven't used it too much and don't know quite how it works, but I was just playing around with it a little bit before the podcast, and it looks pretty cool. A good way to see the themes, at least the ones that you can download from Drupal.org. But it leads to question number 37. Where can I find better themes?
Well, there are several people who've kind of got their feet in this market since it's a big one. For example, TopNotch Themes is .com is a site where you can download for pay Drupal themes, which is pretty cool. You can also learn how to theme yourself if you grab any old template from like open source web design or something like that. It's a fairly easy process to just go through and replace a couple of variables, and then voila, you have your own theme.
I want to add in there.
I didn't think I was going to get away with that.
Yeah, the most popular theme site that there is on the web, Monster Template, I think, started just recently including Drupal themes, so you could actually download Drupal themes from Monster Template. The downer about that is that those themes are just sort of Monster Template's generic themes redone for Drupal. So Drupal being a little bit more complex system than other systems, the stuff you get from there tends to be sort of bolted on. It's not actually made for Drupal, which is why we like to mention TopNotch Themes, because they're actually they're Drupal-specific themes, so they're made much more custom-tailored to Drupal than those generic templates that you might get off of other sites.
It's actually templatemonster.com/drupal-themes.php.
Yep. There we go. That's all.
Next.
Okay. So question number 38 is, how do I add images to Drupal?
Oh, that's a question with a lot of answers. strangely, when you download Drupal, it being so lightweight, it doesn't actually include any built-in support for images, which is just shocking. There's
always
a lot of
upload module on HTML.
Yeah. So it does come with upload module, which allows you to upload any kind of file that you want. And so the built-in way is you upload an image and then you type in the HTML in the body. But other than that, if you're looking for something a little more user-friendly, there are a lot of solutions. There's image module, which is kind of the old-school way, say like Drupal 4.6, 4.7 era, that's continuously been upgraded. Nothing wrong with it. But the general direction of where Drupal is headed with image handling is the combination of CCK, which is the Content Creation Kit, a module that does all kinds of nice things to nodes. And then image field, which is built on top of it, which is just a single field for uploading an image. So you can add in five or six different images to the same post that might have different properties. And finally, if you're looking for an easy solution to insert an image directly into the body of your node, a good solution is IMCE. It's a module that works either with plain text areas, FCK editor, TinyMCE, works with any WYSIWYG editor almost, and it adds a button for image. You can click that and it'll pop up a file browser that will allow your users to upload images directly into a directory, select that image, and then insert it directly into the post. Whew! So, lots of options for images in Drupal.
And eventually, eventually something will get into core, hopefully, can all sort of rally around one solution, right?
Yes, we're looking forward to that. So the next question is, where can I download modules and themes?
Well, that one's easy, at Drupal.org. And if when you go to Drupal.org, there are two places right on the homepage that you can sort of get to that. The first is there's a little green block on the upper right-hand corner that has where you can download Drupal Core, and underneath there it also has a list of other things, modules and themes listed there. You can also click on the download tab at the top of the screen, and that'll take you to all the different kinds of downloads, and again, you can do modules or themes. The specific URLs are drupal.org/project/modules with a capital M, and also drupal.org/project/themes with a capital T. So next question, and one that comes up quite often when talking about modules, is why don't modules have reviews?
I could take a stab at this one. We this is one that we almost just didn't put on here because we thought it's almost too much of a sticky subject. But basically, there's been a lot of talk, and a lot of people who come to Drupal.org are get a little frustrated because although all the modules have a description, it's really difficult to kind of gauge who's using what modules, and there's no metrics on there. There's no, you know, a lot of people are using this module, or comments, people, you know, saying, oh, this is great, or this is horrible. So for new people, it's really difficult for them to come to Drupal.org, and kind of quickly get a lay of the land, especially with the modules and stuff. And the reason that there aren't reviews, currently really has a lot to do with, well, but partly people just haven't built out the infrastructure for it yet. Partly, I mean, it really, you know, we don't want to discourage people from contributing modules and sort of add politics into it. So it's like you write a great module and then you need to go and kind of like defend it, spend all of your time defending the module against, you know, people saying bad things about it and stuff like that. You know, and so there's that aspect too. And again, I mean, it's just sort of the social engineering of it. And also some of the research that's been done, I think it was it Joomla? Or some other projects that have a similar kind of plugin system, they were finding that most of the people who were rating up the modules were people just rating up their own modules, or people conversely down rating competing modules and stuff, and that's something we want to avoid as well. So, I mean, it's just sort of a perfect storm of all those kind of things that have kind of made it not happen. But I think if someone were really to take the flag and kind of run with it to make this happen, we could eventually get that happening on Drupal.org. However, there is an alternative right now, which leads us to question 41, which is where do I find ratings, reviews, and comments of modules?
Well, there is a website called DrupalModules.com that was started up that sort of scrapes a lot of the information from Drupal.org and allows people to rate and different modules and make comments on them. So you can check out DrupalModules.com. But a lot of the times, people should be aware of specific modules. And so the next question is, what are the contrib modules that newbies should be aware of?
Yeah. So what I would say is there's tons of them, but some that in particular you should be aware of are CCK, which lets you build custom content types, views, which lets you display them, things like Path Auto, which give you kind of search engine friendly URLs. Lullabot actually did a top 40 module podcast a couple months back, which you can get at tinyurl.com/yoxd5h, and the Drupal book is going to cover all that in depth as well. DrupalModules.com also has ratings and reviews on modules, so you may be able to find some good information there as well.
YOX D5H, easy to remember.
That's right, man.
Yeah, the top 40. Go to the Lullabot site and just look nose around for the top 40. Top 40 module podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. Number 43 is where you can find new modules.
Ah, yes, that's a good question with an easy answer. If you go to drupal.org/taxonomy/term/14, that's the modules term. And so every new module that's added to drupal.org is listed by date when it was added there, and you can go there and you can probably see 3 to 6 new modules being added every day. And that's where we go to kind of see what's up with the community, what new stuff's coming out, and where Drupal might be headed. Next question. Where's the best place to find out what's happening in the Drupal community?
I have two things about that, in the sense of just sort of like what people are talking about in the community. There's a feed called planet.drupal.org where people who are involved in Drupal community get all their posts sort of aggregated into this one nice list of stuff. So that's a great feed. I have my RSS feed and just sort of see what other people are chatting about. But also just like what's really like happening in terms of Drupal as well is looking at the issue queues, because that's where all the work is actually happening. So perusing that and just sort of seeing what stuff people are working on is also pretty cool. So next question, which is sort of an odd question in our line of questioning right now, but number 45 is, how do I add another page to my Drupal site?
Well, when you go to create content, you're sort of you're faced with a lot of different content types that you can add to your Drupal site, and two of the default ones are page and story, and a lot of people are confused as, you know, what's the difference between page and story. And you know, sometimes when you add a story, it'll show up on the front page, and when you add a page, it'll just sort of disappear. You won't know where it went. So when you add a page, it creates its own individual page. It won't say who created it. Doesn't really matter who wrote the About Us page. It sort of just is created, and it's there. Whereas a story, you may want to know when it was written, who wrote it. And so these types of things of that type of metadata is either displayed or not displayed, and that's sort of a little bit of a taste of the difference between the different content types on in Drupal. So the next question is, why is the search box sometimes gone on Drupal.org?
Yeah, I guess this is a recent thing that's just come up, and I don't know if this will continue or not. But basically, you know, we talked a little bit about contributing money and that some of that money goes to the hardware infrastructure for Drupal.org and running all that stuff. The search process on Drupal.org is a relatively cumbersome one. And so basically when the site is very busy, some of the site administrators basically just take offline the search functionality so that it's basically the difference between Drupal.org staying up and not. So sometimes it goes away, in which case feel free to use Google. It's always there. Question number 47. How do I get my site to have SEO friendly URLs?
Right. So Drupal comes with a path module, which will let you type in a manual URL. So for example, you type in about for your About Me page. And you can also use the path auto module to automate it so that all your blog entries get a path like /blog/, and then the title with hyphens in it. That's a nice little module to download and play with. Number 48 is, what is a white screen of death and how do I get rid of it?
Oh, boy, I wish everyone that submitted issues to my queues would listen to this podcast. it's called the white screen of death. You're clicking around on your Drupal site, you hit submit on some form, and your little throbber in the browser, spins for a little while, and then you get a white screen and no response what's going on at all. What this is it's a PHP fatal error of any kind. And it's giving you a white screen because you don't have errors turned on your site to actually tell you what that error is. So if this is happening on your development environment, then you need to open up PHP INI and actually set that report errors flagged on. There's a helpful article about this on drupal.org/node/158043. So if you ever get the white screen of death, don't panic. It probably means one of two things, that it's either taken more than 30 seconds to execute, or you've exceeded the memory limit, which can happen for a variety of reasons, but those are the two most common ones, and you can figure out how to solve it at that node. So the next question, a lot more straightforward than mine, how do I replace the favicon.ico DrupalCon with my own?
Right, so this is the little thing you can get up in your tabs in your browser in the address bar, and it's like just a little miniature icon. And a lot of people get very frustrated because they change everything on their site, but they can't figure out how to make the little alien head go away from up there. Actually, you can just do this just through. You don't have to do any fancy code stuff. You can just go to administer site building themes, and then configure, hit the configure link on the theme that you're using. And if you scroll down to the bottom of the configuration page for a theme, there is a place where you can check a little box whether or not to use the default icon that's there, and you can upload a new one to replace it with your own. It's that simple.
Awesome.
So we like simple. So in talking about simple, the next question, number 50, is what are some simple things I can do to increase my Drupal site's performance?
Yeah, so if you ever use Yahoo's YSlow profiler, you can really visualize what the bottlenecks are when you're loading a page. And one of those bottlenecks is each time you have a ton of CSS files or a ton of JavaScript files, it has to make an individual request. And one of the things that you can do is, instead of making multiple requests, you can add them all up into one request. You can aggregate your CSS files and your JavaScript files all into one file. Another simple thing is you can turn on page caching for your anonymous users, and then instead of making multiple database queries for anonymous users, you can make just sort of one query to the cache. So those are some simple things.
And you can turn those on in the site settings performance page. If you go to the administration area, there's a performance link.
Yep. Right. The next question is, what are the requirements we needed to run a Drupal site?
First of all, I mean, there's a page on Drupal.org about this, drupal.org/requirements. But Drupal is written to be a very low common denominator solution. And so you can run it on the LAMP platform, Linux, Apache, PHP, MySQL. You can also run it with Postgres. Apache is usually the recommended platform, but I guess people are also running it on what's the Microsoft thing called? It's called
IIS.
IIS, yes, of course. And obviously, I don't use that very much. But yeah, it's really written. You can run it on hosted, virtual hosted, $6 a year hosting. But obviously, when we talk about some of these larger sites, I think Sony's running 25 different servers all at once with various load balancing and things like that. But the basic requirements for Drupal are very, very low at this point. Yes. Question 52, what can I use for a development environment if you're wanted to do some development with Drupal?
Yeah, well, even if you're not doing development, it helps to just have like a local installation of Apache and stuff. There are some nice little sort of unzip it and go distributions. There's WAMP, which is Windows Apache MySQL PHP. There's XAMPP, which is XAMPP, which I think stands for cross-platform Apache such and such. And then there's MAP, which is for Macs. And then if you want to get really into development, there's other tools you can use like Patch and CVS, but those aren't necessary for your normal day-to-day site administration stuff. Question number 53 is, why does a core have X feature?
Well, this kind of goes back to the very first question, which is what is Drupal? Drupal, I mean, the generic term is content management system, but a lot of people and Drupal.org itself refers to it as a content management framework. It's not a complete package. It's instead something that you start off with, and then you take the modules that you need, the functionality you need out of Contrib, and actually add them onto Drupal Core. So Drupal Core, when you download it, is really slim, streamlined, and doesn't have a whole lot of stuff that you don't need. But when a whole lot of modules all end up depending on some central functionality, then those modules become really good candidates for including in core, because it's pretty silly for everybody to download Drupal and then download these this small set of modules that all other modules depend on anyway. Which leads into the next question. Why aren't CCK and views part of core?
Oh boy, it's a good one. well, and to keep it sort of short so we don't take up too much time, but basically, I mean, those are both very complex, very powerful modules, and so the lightweight factor of core needs to be considered. And a lot of it too is that there's a lot of work that's been going on. Like, there's still very moving targets, and a lot of work is going on to make them better and leaner and meaner as contributed modules, and trying to keep up the development pace and keep getting changes and making the modules better is much easier to do in Contrib than if it was part of core. It would then be on the core release schedule, which is a much longer period of time. And so working on these and really hammering them down and getting them to be as lean and mean as possible in Contrib is actually the best route to getting something into core, where we can, you know, sort of distill it and get the best bits into core, which then will go on to a longer release schedule. Anybody else have anything to add to that? Just in terms of hitting it
quick? Just that there are efforts right now to get both of those into core, or at least the central portions of them.
Right, yeah. So, these are definitely not ideas that are new to the community to try and do that.
Also, I just want to point out that it's very ironic that core moves too slow for this, because everybody's always complaining that Drupal moves too fast. But it's true. Yeah.
So, okay, so on to the next question, sort of related to this discussion, is number 55, how do I get X feature into core?
Yeah, I think there's kind of two parts to that question. One is sort of the technological aspect, and the other is sort of the political. And the political is sort of just getting the community to support the idea and get it to review and to get it the sort of committed to the core project, and that sort of happens at the beginning, at the end. The other part is sort of the technological part, which is going through to see if what you want to get into core has already been requested, if there's already an issue, if it's already going on, so you sort of search through the issue queues. And if not, then you can submit a new feature request, and if you're ambitious enough, actually create a working patch against the latest version of the head version of Drupal that actually implements a feature, and then it goes back to sort of getting it reviewed and getting it into the Drupal project. So the next question is Drupal object-oriented?
I'm going to pass on that one.
I can take it, I think.
Well, this is, Angie's going to be much better at answering this than I am.
The answer is no, it's not, but it still implements a lot of OO concepts, like the separation between different subsystems, such as the design and the business logic. And then it implements a bunch of what you would call design patterns within the hook system. So there's a nice document. If you go to the api.drupal.org site, if you search for OOP, you'll get a nice document that sort of explains the rationale behind why Drupal chose not to go with objects. A lot of it has to do with PHP 4 legacy. A lot of it has to do with performance and that sort of thing. But you know, as long as you can get past the idea that a lot of things are arrays rather than using little arrows, a lot of the same concepts that you're comfortable doing in object-oriented languages will still apply in Drupal.
Yeah, I'll tack on two more things, and that's that there are a lot of concepts that we've basically rebuilt into Drupal using procedural programming, things like the theme system, where you have a concept of overriding functions with different ones is built in. But then Drupal is also slowly moving towards object-orientedness in like true objects in certain portions of its software, the most prominent one being the database layer will likely use PDO in the next version of Drupal, PHP data objects, to interface with database. And that most anything that comes out of Earl Miles' lab, that's Merlin of Chaos, pretty much all of his stuff now is object-oriented also. So views and panels and node queue are all object-oriented systems built in Drupal. So the objects or the data pieces themselves are actual objects, but they're working within the framework of Drupal.
Huh. I did not know that.
The next question is, where do I look up API documentation?
I can take that one. That one I can answer. That's easy. You go to api.drupal.org. That's the API stuff. I should also mention that it's the API module for Drupal that powers that website. That's a good example of a sort of non-content management website that's running on Drupal, right? api.drupal.org. You can also download the API module and set up your own API site if you'd like. Question number 58. Where can I find the latest commits to the Drupal code base? So if you want to keep up with what's going on with Drupal, Drupal core, you know, that kind of thing. Nate?
Okay, yeah. The place I usually go for this, another sort of easy URL, drupal.org/CVS. And that's sort of the central activity monitor for what's happening in the Drupal.org repository. You can see all of the commits by anybody in contrib. You can see who's doing the most commits right now. There's a little sidebar that says who's doing a lot of work, and also a sidebar for the most active projects, that is the ones that are receiving the most commits. Sort of a good gauge for measuring activity in Drupal.org contributed repository. So number 59, what license is Drupal released under, and what does that mean for me?
Nice easy one.
Yeah, keeping it short and simple. Drupal is under GPL version 2 or later, we actually just there's a whole big FAQ on this that answers all kinds of questions, and that is located at drupal.org/licensing/FAQ, and there's also a discussion group for the association's legal team where you can sort of ask more questions about what that means, and that's at groups.drupal.org/legal.
I would add to that what that also means is that the GPL is a viral license. It means that not only is Drupal free and open source, but any modules or any themes, the modules in particular, any things that are built on Drupal are also GPL'd. So if you're going to distribute them, they need to be available for free, more or less. Things get into very specifics, and there's some sort of loophole-y kinds of things. But basically what it means is that if you're hoping to build a business selling Drupal modules, you should probably find a different business.
Although you can make a lot of money building modules for companies or anything like that.
There's a lot of money to be made around open source,
certainly,
but just not selling the code
yes,
itself.
There's a huge economy, right? Yes, in creating open source modules, and we oftentimes on the podcast talk about encourage people to sponsor developers of modules to improve them and stuff like that. So definitely we don't want to imply that there's not an economy around this. There are a lot of people like ourselves who are building a thriving business in the Drupal ecosystem. So yeah. All right. The last question. You want
to... Question 60, should I get involved in Drupal, and how?
Yes, you should. And to find out how, you can go to drupal.org/contribute. And on that page, you'll see sort of a landing page of all the different things, ranging from if you're a coder, you can figure out how to get involved with development. If you're not a coder, then you can figure out how you can help spread the word through marketing. Or if you speak another language, you can help translate Drupal's interface into another language. You can help if you find things wrong with Drupal. You can test Drupal and submit bug reports and help with its usability and help document it to make it easier to use for other people, or make it look pretty by designing themes. Or if you don't want to do any of that, you could just give money through donations. So there's lots that you can do. And again, you can find out more at drupal.org/contribute.
60! Awesome. We did it! We got in pretty close to an hour at least. We've been criticized for, you know, the podcasts having a tendency to sort of go on. So there you go. I think we can eat cake and drink ginger ale.
This is probably also the least bantery one we've done in quite a while.
Well, we are, you know, so much pressure.
Maybe we'll ease the anti-banterers.
Anti-banter. the anti-banter contingent. Yes, yes.
I will shoot you with my anti-banter gun. See, now I'm bantering to, like, make up for it.
All right. Well, I'm going to just take my cake and head off. But thanks everybody for coming and joining us on podcast number 60. Like I said, call in with your questions for the next podcast, 877-LULLABOT. That's 877-585-5226. You can kind of call anytime with a question for the podcast. But, I think the next podcast we're going to do is going to be listener questions. So, give us a call. And, thanks everybody for coming on the podcast. And, thanks everybody for listening to the podcast. And, we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.